Hello, everyone. My name is Hong Hu. I am from Virginia Tech. Today, I'm going to present a joint work with my advisor, Professor Gang Wang, the end-to-end measurements of email spoofing attacks. Let's first talk about spear phishing. Spear phishing means targeted phishing attacks. It often involves impersonation. According to previous research, 91% of targeted attacks involve spear phishing, and 95% of state-affinity espionage attack can be traced back to phishing. And let's look at a few real-life examples. 2014, Yahoo data breach. It affected more than 500 million user accounts. According to FBI, it happened because Yahoo employee got spear phished. 2016, Hillary Clinton's campaign chairman, John Podesta. His email got leaked on WikiLeaks. He received one email appearing to be from Google and asking him to change his password. He clicked the link and changed his password. And a few days later, his email is on WikiLeaks. So as you can see, this email looks like it's from Google and its actual address. So why can phishers still impersonate other people so easily? In order to show you how easy it is to impersonate other people, I performed my own phishing test. I impersonated Usenix security co-chair Andrew and William to send emails to my own account. So I didn't phish them, I didn't send any emails to them, I only used their name and address to send spoof email to my own account. And here's the result. As you can see, it is pretty easy to use Andrew's name and address. The same with William. It's easy to use William's address and the address. Also, his profile picture got loaded automatically, and this makes this email even more convincing. So in order to understand how email spoofing works, we need to first cover a little background on SMTP. SMTP stands for Simple Mail Transfer Protocol. It's first defined in 1982. And when it was first defined, it has no built-in authentication mechanism. And attackers can spoof anyone by simply changing the mail from field. So let's say William wants to send an email to me. William needs to first talk to NC State mail server. Then NC State uses SMTP to talk to Virginia Tech. Then I retrieve my email from Virginia Tech mail server. So now, if attacker wants to spoof William, attacker needs to set up his own mail server, then send the email to Virginia Tech by setting the mail from with William address. And because the SMTP has no authentication mechanism, Virginia Tech cannot authenticate this email. So after SMTP was widely used, anti-spoofing protocols appeared to try to solve this problem. The first one is called SPF. SPF is IP-based authentication, and here is how SPF works. NC State needs to first publish SPF record to DNS system. Then NC State sends the email to Virginia Tech, setting a mail from with William's address. And let's just say the IP address here is 1.2.3.4. After receiving the email, Virginia Tech will query the DNS system, basically asking a question, is this IP address authorized? And the answer is yes in this scenario. Now, if attacker wants to spoof NC State and William, it will send email also setting the mail from with William's address. But the IP here, let's say, is 5.6.7.8. And Virginia Tech will ask the same question, is this IP address authorized? And the answer is no in this scenario. So because the attacker cannot obtain NC State IP address, it cannot spoof William and NC State. The second protocol is called DKIM. DKIM is public key based authentication. It works in some way like SPF. When sending an email, NC State needs to sign the email. And after receiving the email, Virginia Tech will use its public key to verify the signature. So because attacker cannot obtain the private key of NC State, it cannot sign and thus cannot spoof William and NC State. The third protocol is called DMARC. DMARC is based on SPF and DKIM. One of its key functionality is to provide a policy. So the policy means how senders instruct receivers to handle spoof emails. So this email fails authentication, how senders expect the receivers to do. So now we have anti-spoofing protocols. Are they actually being used? How widely are they being used? In order to understand this problem, we performed a scanning of SPF and DMARC records of the Alexa top 1 million domains. We also checked their policy. The strict policy means sender wants receivers to reject the spoof email. And relaxed policy means there's no recommending policy from sender for receivers. We didn't check at DKIM because of the nature of DKIM, we cannot directly scan the records. So domains publish SPF and DKIM and DMARC record to stop itself from being spoofed. If they didn't publish those records, attacker can spoof them without being recognized. And we performed the scanning 3 times, spanning nearly a year. As you can see, the adoption rate for SPF is around 50%, and the strict policy is around 15%. After a year, the adoption rate basically stayed the same. For DMARC, the adoption rate is around 5%, and the strict policy rate is around 1%. And after a year, the adoption rate didn't increase much. So the conclusion here is, after years, the adoption rates are still low, and they also increase very slowly. The low adoption rate is a big problem. It raises up 3 major problems. First, how will email providers detect and handle spoofing emails? Second, under what condition can those spoofing emails get into user inbox? Third, once those spoof emails get into user inbox, how will email providers actually warn users? In order to understand these 3 problems, we performed a measurement and a user study. We checked the 35 popular email providers and their reaction to spoof emails. We performed a user study to examine users' reaction to the spoof emails and the warning. So, in the next section, I'm going to talk about our end-to-end spoofing experiments. So, the goal for this experiment is to understand how email providers detect and handle spoof emails. We also want to know what kind of spoofing emails have a better chance of getting to user inbox. Our methodology is to perform a black box testing on email providers. So we treat the email providers as a black box. We send different kinds of spoof emails and observe the output, whether they are in the inbox, spam, or got rejected. So during this experiment, all emails we send are sent to our own account. So there's no other real users involved in the experiment. We selected 35 popular email providers and divide them into 3 groups. Their first group performed full authentication. They check SPF, DKIM, and DMARC. The second group performed partial authentication. They check SPF or DKIM, but not DMARC. The third group performed no authentication. They didn't check SPF or DKIM or DMARC. After selecting the target email providers, our next thing we want to decide on is what kind of spoof emails we want to send to them. We choose 30 senders we want to spoof and also divide them into 3 groups. The first group published SPF or DKIM with a strict DMARC policy. The second group published a SPF or DKIM with a relaxed DMARC policy. The third group didn't publish SPF or DKIM or DMARC. The example for them is Facebook, eBay, and the Pirate Bay. We use 5 types of content: phishing content, benign content, blank email with an URL, blank email with an attachment. So the phishing content comes from a real phishing attack targeted to Virginia Tech. We use the 2 types of IP, dynamic IP and static IP. We send out the same email 5 times in random order. Every target email provider will receive 1,500 emails. In total, we sent out 52,500 emails, and we carefully control the sending rate to try to minimize the impact on target email providers. So here is the overall result. The y-axis is the penetration rate. The penetration rate means the emails ended up into user inbox among all emails we sent for each target email provider. Let's first look at a full authentication check group. As you can see, even when they are doing full authentication check, they still let a lot of our spoof emails into user inbox. For example, Gmail lets 53% of our emails into user inbox. Yahoo lets 35% of our emails into user inbox. iCloud lets 7% of our emails into user inbox. And Hotmail is the only email provider that blocked all of our emails. Let's then look at the partial authentication check group. Averagely, they have a higher penetration rate than the full authentication check group. For example, Mail.com have a 27% overall penetration rate. Finally, the no authentication check group. As you can see, the penetration rate here is almost 100%. And for example, tonline.de nets all of our emails into user inbox. So the conclusion here is email providers still let spoof emails into user inbox, even when they do authentication. So what's the most important infecting factor here? Let's first look at sender policy and receiver authentication. For sender policy, we have strict policy. We have relaxed and non-group, which didn't publish SPF or DKIM or DMARC. For receiver authentication, we have full authentication, partial authentication, and null authentication. Let's first look at this scenario. Sender published a strict policy. Receivers are doing full authentication check. The penetration rate here is 13%. It's the lowest among all the group, but still, it's 13%. Let's then look at when sender didn't publish any authentication records. The penetration rate is highest compared to the strict and relaxed group. Then let's look at a low authentication group. When receivers are not doing any authentication, the penetration rate here is much higher than full authentication and partial authentication group. So this is the sender policy and receiver authentication. What about IP? Our result shows that emails sent from static IP have a 60% of chance getting into user inbox. Emails sent from dynamic IP has a 34% chance of getting into user inbox. And content. Our result shows that the five content we use have a similar penetration rate, ranging from 40% to 50%, so not a much big difference here. The conclusion here is it takes both senders and receivers to configure correctly to stop spoofing, and even so, the penetration rate is still 13%. So email providers put so many spoofing emails into user inbox. How do they actually warn users? Our result shows that 29 among 35 web clients and 24 among 28 mobile clients didn't give user any warnings. Here are a few exceptions. Gmail. Gmail provided warnings on both web and mobile clients. That question mark means Gmail cannot verify the sender. Naver.com from Korea and ProntoMail also both provided warnings on web and mobile clients. They used text box explicitly tell users they cannot verify the sender. 163.com, 126.com, and mail.ru only provide warnings on web client. They also explicitly tell users they cannot verify the sender. So the warnings here are not only a few email providers are actually providing warnings, and it's not consistent across web and mobile clients. After email providers put spoof emails into user inbox, our last question is how will email users actually react to them and those warnings? The challenge for our user study is how to capture users' realistic reaction. From previous research, it shows NAP experiment have a limited ability to reflect the reality. So we came up with a methodology that tried to make users believe they are not in an experiment. We only tell them after the experiment, and we offer them a data withdrawal option. They can withdraw the data and still get paid. Our user study have two phases. For the phase one, we use a survey as distraction, but to actually correct collect their email address. We frame the survey as a survey to understand their email using habits. We ask their email address and send them email with a tracking pixel. The tracking pixel here is to determine if they actually open their email. We then ask some questions about that email and some other distraction questions. Then we paint them and make them believe their survey is over. So before phase two, users will believe the survey is over because we already paid them. And we wait for 10 days and hope they will forget about our survey. And after 10 days, we send out our spoofing email. So because we recruited a user from Amazon Mechanic Turk, the message we sent is to allow them click a link and check their message delivery status on the Amazon Mechanic. As you can see, this email looks like it's from Amazon. There's a link pointing to our ARM server. There is also an invisible tracking pixel. We divide a user into two groups. The first group receive an email like this. The second group receive an email with embedded text warning, basically telling them the sender failed fraud authentication and they may not be the who they appear to be. We wait for 20 days to see if they open their email, click the link, and after 20 days, we send our final email to explain our experiment and offer the data withdrawal option. So we recruited 408 users from Amazon Mechanic Turk. 243 are in a no warning group, and 245 are in a warning group. We have to have gender distribution and a diverse age level and education level distribution. So here is the result for our user study. 243 users are in a no warning group. 245 are in a warning group. After phase one, we find that 176 users from the first group and 179 users from the second group did not block our tracking pixel. After phase two, 94 users from the first group and 68 users from the second group opened our email. 46 users from the first group and 32 users from the second group clicked the URL. The overall click rate for the first group is 26%, and for the second group is 17%. But if we only consider users that actually opened our email, the penetration rate for the first group is 48%. For the second group is 37%. So the conclusion here is warning only slightly lowers the click rate. And even with warning, the click rate is still high. Our result shows that there is a big gap between server detection and user protection. Most email providers still not spoofing emails into user inbox. And most email providers don't give users any warnings. And warnings cannot eliminate the risk. There are some countermeasures we can take. We should promote the adoption of SPF, DKM, and DMARC. We should place warnings consistently across web and mobile clients. Our future work includes designing more effective warnings, defeat warning fatigue, and we need more user training and education. And that concludes my presentation, and thank you.
Ben Stock from CISPA. Thanks for the interesting talk. One thing for clarification, what does opened email mean? Means then on the second try, they were also tracked?
Open email, we have a tracking pixel, right? Okay. Open email means they opened, because there are some emails enter your inbox, but you didn't open them. Yes. So they actually open our email and load the tracking pixel.
Okay, but that means if you have somebody who's using like Thunderbird, for example, which deactivates remote images by default, you would not count them as opened email, correct?
First, they don't have to use like Thunderbird. They can use Yahoo Web, Gmail Web. It doesn't matter. Okay. Yes, we only count those who are not blocking our track pixel.
Okay. And did you check if there is people that were not tracked but opened the email?
Yes, we didn't count them.
None. Or okay.
There are some who actually clicked the URL, but we didn't see they opened our email. But we didn't count them because we only count those who are not blocking our tracking pixel.
Okay, and one more quick question. You said 50% or so of the top million has SPF, which I think is really, well, high already. Can you talk about the kind of the distribution? Is it really evenly spaced out across all top million domains, or is it to the left or to the right?
We do perform this. Okay. This is like the published rate. So we do have a slide that is in our paper. This is the adoption rate among different rank. So as you can see, the domains in higher rank they have a high chance they publish these records.
So even up to 70% more. Yes. All right, thank you.
Hey, really nice work. Dave Levin, University of Maryland. You mentioned that about 60% penetration rate for static IP addresses and 30-something percent for dynamic. Can you give some intuition behind that? And I'm also kind of curious, is this representative, you think, in general for static versus dynamic IP addresses, or is it something to do with the ones that you were using, you think?
Okay. So we believe that static IP has a better penetration rate is because most legit mail servers are using static IP. So if you send email on a dynamic IP, it looks suspicious. So that's our that's my guess.
You think they're actually like detecting this looks static versus dynamic, or is it just that maybe that dynamic IP address in the past had been used for something mixed in with nefarious behavior?
It could be, but before our experiment, we checked both IP from like there are some blacklists you can check if your IP have been the reputation or if you have been blocked. So both of our IPs are not blocked or on any blacklist.
Thanks.
Hi, Mary Ellen Zirko, MIT Lincoln Laboratory. Always love another SPF DMARC DKIM study. Thank you. Seriously. Okay. Question about the warning in your user study. Did you design it to be specifically or generally like other warnings, or did you design it to be not like other warnings in the wild? Did you take that into consideration?
We designed it to like the warnings provided by Hotmail.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
One more thought about the not clicking people. So the people that clicked but didn't get tracked before. Uh-huh. Can you get an intuition? Is the fraction of those people? So I mean, you know that a certain amount of people were kind of tracked, and you know that there is other people who are not tracked.
Uh-huh.
And out of those, some must have clicked. Can you talk about the? Do you know off the top of your head the rate? So the underlying question is more. If I'm using something like Thunderbird, which does not allow to include remote resources, am I less prone to fall for these things?
So the tracking pixel is actually independent to the click. So
but you said you discarded those that did not get tracked and then clicked.
Yes.
Right?
We only consider that are not blocking our tracking pixel, so we can see if they actually open our email.
Yep.
And see if they actually click the link.
Okay, but out of those people that did not get tracked, so they did not open the email.
Uh-huh.
Maybe you can also take it offline because...
Yeah, okay. I have one more question, then you can continue this discussion.
All right, hi. Dev from Dropbox. I'm looking for interns, so this is great. So I was wondering, have you considered open sourcing a tool where I can test my own emails, or is this available? Because I would love to test all the different email clients and email options.
We haven't open sourced it, but we can. It's a simple fix. We can do it.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.